At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 350 plus programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
My name's Paul Bestall. This is Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome to this week's Mysteries and Monsters. This week, we're joined by British cryptozoologist and paranormal investigator, Jackie Tonks. Jackie has been lucky enough to visit some of the most well-known Bigfoot locations around the world, with some of the most renowned cryptozoologists in the field. We discuss Jackie's thoughts on Bigfoot and other hominids, her expeditions, and the incredible sighting when she saw two Bigfoot at close distance. After listening to Jackie, you'll be in no doubt as to what she saw. We also cover her paranormal experiences and some of the investigations that she's been on. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Well, other than that, I'm sure all of us know a lot more about pandemics than we did probably a month ago. So all I'll say is just follow the advice of the scientists. Always verify anything that you're coming across on social media. Double check everything. I've seen so much nonsense over the last week or so, and some of it's pretty dangerous, so just be careful. And don't forget to be kind to the most vulnerable in society. Let's try and support those when they're going to need us the most. Other than that, make sure you all stay safe. Moving on. Thank you again for the lovely comments, emails and reviews we had over the last few weeks. Please leave us a nice review on your podcast app, as it really does help people discover us and keeps the show growing. Once again, thank you for those of us who sent us donations last week for us to push the show onwards. And if you want to help out, you can find us on PayPal by searching Mysteries Monsters. Other than that, on our social media, you can get us on Facebook under Mysteries and Monsters. We're Mystery Monsters on Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget, you can drop us an email via mysteriesandmonsters@gmail.com. with any guest suggestions, or if you'd like to appear. Right. Let's talk to Jackie Tonks. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by British cryptozoologist and paranormal investigator, Jackie Tonks. Jackie has 20 years' experience in the search for Bigfoot, and we're delighted for her to join us today. Hi, Jackie. How are you doing?
Hello. Hi. It's nice to be on the show. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. How on earth, with the greatest of respect, and I say this generally to everybody, because most people have an origin story of sorts, Jackie.
What on earth got a lady from the Midlands in the UK interested in Bigfoot?
I think originally as a child I was the R.C. Clarke stuff and the iconic sort of image of Patty going across the dry creek bed. That always fascinated me as a child. And then I sort of, you know, forgot that really. And then I used to live right by St. David's Station in Exeter.
Yes.
And I was reading, I was still interested, you know, I used to read the Fortean Times. And I was sort of thought I better walk the dog one night. So I sort of went to the end of the road about 10:30 at night, crossed the road. And as I just finished in the house reading the Fortune Times article on the Mongolian death worm and saw the author at the end and this rather sort of scary looking gothy guy. And I thought, oh, Richard Freeman. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting article. Anyway, walks the dog to the end of the road, crosses the road towards the river. And the guy whose picture I have just seen in the article walks past me. And I do this double take because, you know, 14 Times is an international magazine. Yeah. So I sort of swing round with my dog and sort of said, oh, are you Richard? And this guy turns around. He said, yes. And I said, do you write for the 14 Times? And he goes, yes, I do. And I went, oh, my God, I've just been reading your article in the house. And that's how I met Richard, dead freaky. You know, what's the chances of that? The guy happens to be walking along the bottom of your street. You know, I didn't realise he actually lived in Exeter, but that was paranormal in itself. It's very weird. And then I bumped into him about 6 months later, and he said, we've got a conference. I'm part of the Centre for Sporting Zoology, and we got something called the Weird Weekend.
Yep.
North Devon. So that's how I got into it. And the Bigfoot Inside, a couple of years into the conference, going there, I met Adam Davies and I've met Andrew Sanderson. They were going out and doing an expedition Bigfooting, and they said, did I want to come along? And at the time, I didn't even believe it. I thought a couple of percentage chance of it existing, but I really didn't think there was much chance in a first world country of, you know, Bigfoot actually existing. You know, so it was pretty low stats. But after going there, I was, you know, even before I'd seen one, I was about 90-odd% sure they existed. So,
I mean, that is the thing, because I always find that aspect of it incredible, that like you say, because the majority of reports are usually focused around, you know, northern parts of the United States and Canada, I think our general perception is it's just too populated. And then when you get there and you actually see the terrain and just how vast and wild it is, I think it gives people a very different perspective on the potential.
Oh, definitely. I mean, sort of the bits when at the time I saw two Bigfoot go across the logging road. I mean, the terrain there, this was Northern California, not very far from Bluff Creek. Most of the terrain was a load of trees growing on rocks. And it just demonstrated it to me. I got these brand new hiking boots and I wrecked them in 10 minutes of walking on this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it was really hard sort of lava, sort of, I think it probably had mica in it. Just wrecked your boots within 10 minutes. So you can see why not many people want to walk across those areas. And especially in Washington State, where I've been, you know, been to a lot, you know, there's vast wilderness. You know, there's you know, regular paths people take, but there's loads of areas which are very difficult to get to, you know. So I could easily see after a while that there could be something there.
Absolutely. I mean, you're very fortunate, because I think for someone to be invited by Adam Davies, you know, do you fancy popping across to the States with us? I think is a wonderful, you know, it's my kind of dream invite, to be fair, Jackie. So... And was it daunting, or did you kind of embrace it and just think, well, opportunities like this don't come around very often?
Well, I mean, initially I just, you know, I thought, oh, that's great. You know, it'd be really interesting to go with them. But I just thought, oh, I want to see a bear. I didn't expect to sort of get anything that would suggest there was a Bigfoot there. So for me, it was just a great chance to go into the wilderness. And I'd been to bits of Africa, wilderness in Africa, but not been to sort of areas of the United States wilderness. And it was just an opportunity to see the wilderness and see the wildlife there. I didn't expect in a million years I'd get any real, you know, solid Bigfoot experiences.
Yes.
You know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you're one of the few people I've had the privilege of speaking to, Jackie, that's had some kind of physical or auditory experience, and I always find people such as yourself I'm just very intrigued by the emotional responses that people have. I mean, I was very fortunate to speak to Ron Moorhead, who was obviously very famous because he's synonymous with the incredible Sierra sounds.
Yeah.
But your experience is extremely unusual, primarily because you saw more than one. So what happened? How did you get to this situation where you were traveling down this logging road at the time?
We were camping in an area down a sort of logging road in California, and it was a sort of 40-mile long logging road. Our campsite was right at the end. Mm. It's a logging road that just goes out of Orleans. I think it's called Sasquatch, if I remember correctly. Orleans Road, don't quote me on that, it's in the book somewhere. And it was a logging road that was never finished. So it's like hardly anybody goes down there. So you've got a nice little campsite at the end, very primitive campsite, but it's 40 miles long, you know, and it's sort of, and you know, you can go quite, you've got Willow Creek relatively close that a lot of tourists go to. And we were just coming back from Willow Creek because it's the nearest town really to get, you know, food there. And we were about, I would say about halfway along, and we didn't realise at the time we were only about 2.5 miles from Bluff Creek, exactly the spot where Patty was filmed. And they just sort of, from a distance, I saw what looked like two very stocky men in dark overalls. It looked like they were dark overalls with a hood up, running barefoot. And I sort of said to my, you know, friend Tom Cantrell, who's one of my mentors. I mean, he's been Bigfooting for over 40 years now, and he's seen a lot of them as well. I sort of joked to him, I said, what are those idiots doing running barefoot on this? Because it was very rough ground. It cut your feet to pieces. And he starts, you know, big belly laugh. And he said, what you're here looking for, you know, what you're here, you know, you've seen them, basically, what you're looking for. And then suddenly I heard him yell, because these things had run into the trees, and the area they ran into was all burnt out trees. And they'd obviously panicked, so they couldn't get cover, because it was burnt out for about 30 miles on the one side, and the other side was all thick forest. They obviously panicked, and they ran back in front of the car, at which point I heard Tom yell. And he slammed on the brakes, and suddenly these things are right in the middle of the road looking at us. And I was like, oh my goodness. You know, and my brain at the time, it's trying to make sense of what it's seeing. So my brain is still thinking men, but I'm thinking, whoa, they're ugly men. They've got very big, I've seen the domed head, I've seen what was obviously hair all over rather than fur, because they don't have fur, it's like hair like a human, but it's all over them, but from the face and the hands and bare, you know, feet seem to be bare on the bottom. But you know, your brain's still trying to make sense of it. And I was seeing this, and my brain's thinking, oh, they've got really broad shoulders, they must have a rucksack under the suit. It's just like your brain is trying to rationalize what you're seeing, and I'm thinking really ugly drug runners with drugs underneath the seat, because your brain's just trying to make sense of it. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple of days afterwards I was able to suddenly perceive what I'd seen, and I suddenly couldn't stop shaking, and I was like a blabbery fool. I was going, oh, is that real? Like, I couldn't stop shaking for about 2 hours when my brain was suddenly able to let me perceive what, you know, and sort of think about what I'd seen. Very strange experience, because it's like seeing a unicorn in the middle of the road. Your brain can't cope with it, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, and I suppose the other aspect of this as well, Jackie, is that, you know, you're a trained medical professional, aren't you?
I'm a social worker. Yes. I'm a social worker, yes.
But you tend to work in the realms of psychology and mental illness, I believe.
Yes, my first degree was psychology, and then I trained as a therapist as well, and I'm a trained social worker now. So I'm used to working with people who were having, you know, work with people with schizophrenia quite a lot, who are used to having unusual experiences. So, you know, to actually have that really freaky experience myself, you know, my brain, I was trying to sort of rationalize, you know, am I just, you know, am I trying to construct something here, you know, you sort of you know, and like I do with clients, because some of my clients have heard me on radio shows, and obviously it's a little bit awkward because, you know, I'm saying I've seen a mythical animal and they've got mental illness, so, you know, the ones who have talked to me about it, I've said things like, well, you know, I had an unusual experience. How, you know, how would you work with that if you got an unusual experience? How would you test it out, whether it was real or not? You know, and they've said things to me, well, there was more than one of you who witnessed it. And I said, yeah, there was two other people. So they said, oh, yeah, that's a way of telling whether it's real or not. I said, yeah, you know, and, you know, sort of analysing the situation, really. So it's quite a useful experience to talk to people about. But, you know, that's what I was doing. I was trying to think, hang on, my friends have seen it as well. So I know it's not just me, you know.
I mean, that's what I find perplexing, and also I think gives your experience some real credence as well, Jackie, is because of your professional qualifications, you've got the template and the framework to tick off the boxes of, as you say, trying to rationalize it. So would you suspect that it was based on that framework of education in that particular field of psychology that you ended up having such an emotional reaction to the realization of what had happened?
I think it was weird, like the actual experience was, I almost experienced it like you would a car accident. And when I remember it, it's almost like a traumatic memory, because I was in the Nepal earthquake. So it's a very similar way I recall the Bigfoot experience to how I recall the earthquake. Everything slowed down, you know, and although, you know, these things are probably, the view we got of them was 3-4 seconds, but six, you know, they're running, and we probably got a view from the distance, probably 4 or 5 seconds, and then, you know, so many seconds of them running back again, and they hesitated for about a second and a half, probably 2 seconds at the most. They stopped and stared at us in the middle of the road. That was almost like 20 seconds, because it had all slowed down in my brain, so I was able to analyze it. And you know, it's very weird. And somebody gets me to recall it, like Richard Freeman sort of showed me other pictures, the Sykesville monster, I don't know whether you're aware of that, and like it's done, like they've done a photo reconstruction sort of thing of different images. That made me really shaky. I actually felt quite sick when I looked at it. Not fear, but like, oh my goodness, that looks a bit close to what I saw. It looked a lot more human-like than that, but it's very, very similar, some of the features. And when he showed it me, I felt quite nauseous. It was almost like reliving, like you would a car accident. Yes. It was quite weird, actually. It sent me a bit, oh dear, you know. I had to stop for a while and think, you know. So, and some of the images I see, the reconstructions, are some very good. The front of the cover of Enoch, have you seen that Autumn Williams book?
Yes.
There's an amazing, I think that's actually her own artwork. It's all like, and it looks like a photograph, doesn't it? That freaks me out, looking at that, because that's exactly like, you know, the thing I saw, because it's got no whites in its eyes, the thing I saw, and it's quite these dark, big dark eyes, you know, and that's very, very similar. And proper nose as well. It's not like a gorilla nose, it's like a proper sort of flattened nose thing.
Yeah. I mean, how far away were you when they basically froze like rabbits in the headlights?
It's interesting, me and my friend, he said it was 20 feet. I said it was 15 feet. He's ex-forces. He's probably better judging distance. But we're very similar in our judgments. And I said they were 6.5 and 7 feet tall. He said they were think, 7 and 7.5 feet tall. So we were very, you know, not that far out in our judgments. And he said, I thought the skin was a lot more olivey. He had a Spanish artist reconstruct the image of the older male, and he got the skin a lot pinker. But I thought they were more sort of olivey colour skin. But it can vary from pink to black, I hear, you know.
But at the end of the day, I don't want it to sound like an exaggeration. You would call that, you know, as the phrase goes up north, spitting distance, essentially. I mean, that's,
yeah,
it's too close to, you know, as I'm sure many a person will have said to you, oh, you saw two bears.
No, I mean, exactly. Clear as a bell what they were, yeah. I mean, this is the thing. People say, well, bears have got long snouts. They've got quite short shoulders. These have shoulders. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. My judgment was 3 to 3.5 feet. And there's, you know, there's found police officers actually judge the shoulders 3 to 3.5 feet. So I've got, you know, and they're supposed to be very good at judging distance and size. So that's interesting. But I mean, bears have got very, you know, shoulders aren't very large. They slope off. So, you know, it was very, very clear. Yeah. And I'm glad I was in the car. I don't know whether you've heard of my later experience, which wasn't a visual, but it was a rock throwing incident. That was far too close for comfort. So
yes,
I can tell you about that as well. But there was no car, and that was right next to me. That was terrifying.
I mean, which expedition was the sighting when you were in the car then? What year was that?
Oh, I keep getting it wrong. I think it was about, I think it's 2012. I'm no good on dates. I think it's about 2012, I think, if I remember correctly, yeah. Roughly 2012, I think, around then.
So you'd basically been sort of spending, what we're saying there, about the best part of 10 years you'd been interested in Bigfoot and going out and searching for them.
Yeah, I'd go when I can, yeah. And I sort of got into going to the Sasquatch Summit, which was really at Ocean Shores, which is in top of Washington State. And that's a really good experience, and it's amazing. You know, you've got quite a few thousand people there, and almost everybody, about, you know, they put their hands up, who's seen a Bigfoot, and it's usually about 80-odd% of people.
Yes.
You know, and you've got people there who have them in the garden and feed them. You know, you've got some amazing things happening. And I was chatting to the Kinult tribe there, some of the young people in the Kinult tribe. They had a stall there, and they'd done some amazing carvings of the Bigfoot faces and got some amazing t-shirts with the tribal artwork. And I was saying to them, do you believe in it? Oh yeah, you know, 100%. They would, like, it was just a normal animal to them. And they were telling us, you know, about a local elderly man who used to feed one, and he used to sit on the bench with him. And it was just like a normal thing they were describing, as if it was perfectly normal to be hand feeding a Bigfoot. It was perfectly not anything unusual at all to them, you know.
Quite
strange.
Sharing a baguette together. It's
yeah, exactly. I mean, I suppose, you know, he gradually had to build up the trust, but and then the old man died, and they didn't know what happened to this Bigfoot. But supposedly, he fed this Bigfoot for 10 years. You know, that's
It's incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, it is. I always find it a very perplexing aspect of the whole Bigfoot mythologies is the comfortableness or the very relaxed nature that the First Nations and the Native Americans have towards Bigfoot and Sasquatch. That it's a matter of fact. And when you come to examine their artwork and their paintings, and they have images of such creatures, they're dismissed as fantasy, despite the fact that they're often with murals featuring bison or bears. So it perplexes me that it's completely discounted, yet it's often in the vicinity of artwork of existing animals, Jackie.
Well, exactly. And I mean, if you go to the Vancouver, there's a museum in the university grounds there. I think it's the Museum of Anthropology or something. Mm-hmm. And they've got some amazing Bigfoot masks. And some of them are really, really old.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not meant to be any apes in the area. And yet these look so ape-like. You know, they've got all the features. The noses are quite human-like, but the rest of it's very ape-like, you know.
Yeah.
And you might, you know, you did have some First Nation people, you know, going out on ships,
yep.
going to Europe, you know, and around in other countries where there might have been apes. That did happen relatively early. So there's a possibility they brought that back. But, you know, I think, you know, there is a lot of consistency there, really. You know, and a lot of behaviours they describe of Bigfoots are very, you know, hominid or ape-like, what we'd expect from hominids. So, yeah. I mean, I personally think it's quite a primitive hominid more than an ape. What I saw looked more, I'd say, like Homo habilis or something. Mm. It didn't look ape-like enough. It was quite human-looking in a way.
Yeah. I mean, with the greatest respect, I think if we worked on the principle that, you know, Native Americans and First Nations people, yes, you know, quite clearly some of them did travel the world, but the aspect of expecting them to then return home and educate all their friends and family of how simians look, to be able to create these wonderful masks that, as you refer to, some of them are extremely lifelike and quite, they all seem very similar in design, and, you know, there's no kind of outlandish version of some of these.
No, because, I mean, you look at people who saw crocodiles and then they went back to Europe, and they had some very bizarre reconstructions of crocodiles in their artwork, didn't they? But these are very, very consistent, you know, and you wouldn't get that. That's what, I mean, that's what Richard Freeman said. If you get real consistency, you tend to have a real animal. And, you know, Bigfoots are, you know, described in such a consistent way for those who haven't seen one, who don't believe in them. You've only got to look at the reconstructions. And I mean, David Pilates, you know, he's with Harvey Pratt, the forensic artist, you know, he went around interviewing the people under affidavit, which is basically thing they sign. If they're lying, they can actually go to prison. It's quite serious to lie if you sign that. And he got them reconstructing, you know, these Bigfoots with the help of Harvey Pratt, the artist, and they're just almost identical. You know, there's a bit of variation, you know, some of them look more human like than others, but, you know, the pointed head, domed head, you know, sunken eyes, everything's almost identical, large shoulders, you know.
I mean, that's like you say, you know, obviously I've had the pleasure of speaking to Richard a couple of times, and it's one of those things that, like I said to you, it is a bone of contention for me that in one hand they can accept ancient artwork as real depiction, and yet in the other hand dismiss aspects that just don't fit in our known knowledge of existing zoological fauna.
Yeah, I think in North America as well, I think in Washington State area and Oregon, they're a little bit more accepting that it might be a real animal. But in some areas of America that is very, very strongly Christian and religious, it's a real threat, you know, because it's possibly a missing link.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the, you know, the sort of issues of the logging as well.
Yes.
You know, if it's a rare animal identified, they'd have to stop logging, and they found a rare owl. I think it's a, can't remember, it's a short or long-eared owl anyway, in Oregon, and they lost, you know, an awful lot of money to the economy. And, you know, so it's a real threat, you know, and the idea of this big, scary, carnivorous potentially eight foot high primate that, you know, it's quite scary for people, and they don't want to admit there really is this big hairy bogeyman out there, you know. You know, we're not too sure how dangerous it is, whether it is dangerous, you know. It is part, definitely there's a lot of evidence it is carnivorous, you know. And I think a lot of, you know, cases of, you know, it's a bit like a bear. If you act like a preyed on animal and you run, you know, you're probably putting yourself more at risk if you stand your ground like you would with a bear, you know. And I think a lot of these cases, like with sharks, you know, you might get mistaken for something else, been accidentally taken. So, you know, I think that there's always a potential risk. But I think like any animal, you know, it still needs to be protected and it shouldn't be hunted, even if there is a potential risk to humans. So,
yeah, I mean, this is the perplexing trend I've noticed recently. And I don't know whether this is a change in thought or it's just people trying to be fashionable. But I've kind of noticed that we've kind of gone a little bit away from this original idea that perpetuated for quite a long time that Bigfoot was just like a big friendly giant hanging about, chilling out in the woods. And it seems to me that there seems to be a bit more caution coming into the field in regards to any potential reaction, Jackie.
I think you do. I mean, even gorillas. I mean, gorillas don't eat meat. But even gorillas, I've sat in the middle of mountain gorillas in the Congo, and you have to watch your back. You know, they're a wild animal, and they're fair. I mean, these are habituated gorillas as well, you know, and somebody were told not to walk behind a tree, and one of the group did, and suddenly the silverback just charged in the middle of us. And, you know, I mean, they're habituated ones. So, you know, even anything ape-like that's habituated is, you know, it's a wild animal.
Yes.
So, you know, there is a risk. And, you know, if they are carnivorous, you know, there is potentially a risk. And I think, you know, I have heard people say, oh, you know, it's almost talking about it like a Jesus type figure. It's very bizarre. And like, oh, it's protect me. It won't let anything happen to me. Well, I think that's really dangerous because, you know, I think it needs to be treated with respect. But I think, you know, that's very naive. You know, it could accidentally hurt you, you know, at that size. You know, gorillas will, you know, pick up people and cuddle them, you know, and break your ribs, you know. I mean, Coco the gorilla, when they first had her, they had to teach her not to hurt people because she didn't know her own strengths. And that's a hand-reared gorilla. So, you know, I think the potential, you know, I think we just have to be careful, really, treat animals with respect. And if you invade their, you know, there's been a lot of the accounts of people getting hurt, you know, that the Teddy Roosevelt account of the trappers and the one having his neck broken by potential Bigfoot, that was because there was young around, you know, and a lot of animals will attack if you're between them and they're young, you know. So
yes, the infamous Bauman case is that's the infamous Bauman case, isn't it, where the
yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
It's. I was. I know Ken Gerhard in his latest Bigfoot book covers that once again, because that's always been one of my favourite Bigfoot encounters from the turn of the century, because it is a very dark story. It's it's very unusual as well, like I say, because of this situation. Because as you refer to, Jackie, I think there is that kind of lack of awareness when it comes to Bigfoot, as if it is a wild animal, because we only have to, you know, a prime example of a human pushing his luck with animals is the tragic story of the gentleman, Timothy Treadwell, who suddenly he was a bear whisperer. And if you've ever...
But interestingly enough, none of his own bears attacked him.
Yes.
It was a rogue bear from outside that was starving. So it's interesting because it was none of his habituated bears who attacked him.
Yeah.
It was an outsider, which is, I mean, he did amazingly sat amongst a load of wild grizzlies, and it wasn't his own bears that got him in the end, which is quite, so in a way he proved it. You know,
I mean, he'd
very
been
sad
there.
Though. Horrible end though.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I've seen the documentary, and it is an incredible work of art. I recommend if anybody wants to see a tragic documentary, which is both perplexing and fascinating and also deeply saddening. I
mean, Werner Herzog's a brilliant director anyway, and I think, you know, he really was the person to do that, really. But it is a rather shocking thing in the end.
I think hadn't he been going there about 7 years as well? It wasn't the first time he'd turned up. He'd really built up this, I mean, to be fair, as you touch on, he clearly had got some kind of rapport there. I don't know how he'd got away with it, because, you know, good lord, I mean, he was No, it was a, was it like a migratory path he was essentially in the middle of, or something, Jackie?
Something like that, yeah. But I mean, they were grizzlies, and yes. I mean, grizzlies are known, even like tame grizzlies are one of the most dangerous bears. They say black bears, you know, when they get tame, are fairly okay. But they, you know, you still have to watch them in the wild. But yes. You know, but grizzlies, even tame ones, are very dangerous animals. You know. Mm.
So, as you referred to earlier, you had a second experience that gave you a slightly different impression of Bigfoot. So when did that occur, and where were you?
That was, what are we now? It was 20, I think it was 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. I make my dates, but a couple of years ago anyway.
Yeah.
And I've been to the Sasquatch Summit, and myself and Brooklyn, he's a guy who films the summit. He mm-hmm. he normally works in television and film. He films the summit. We have a little ritual because we're the only English people in the whole conference. And he's originally from Bradford. He's got a very sort of, you know, American accent there because he's lived there for years. Yes. But he's, you know, he's originally from Bradford. So we sort of, you know, we're the only English people. So we have a little ritual on a Saturday night. We go Bigfooting because we're in a prime Bigfoot area. So we're about 10:30 at, you know, 10 o'clock at night. We'll take our gear up. We do a little walk around the wooded areas around there because, I mean, you know, they've said the Kinnock tribe who own the, because it's held in a casino owned by the Kinnock tribe. Yes. The Sasquatch Summit, and they supposedly have had Bigfoots right outside the hotel, so it's prime area. And anyway, we're speaking to Johnny who runs the summit, and he said they'd had solid activity for a couple of weeks, literally a couple of miles away. So we thought, whoa, this is brilliant, you know, loads of reports of a Bigfoot a couple of miles away. So we got the rough area, and we just parked the car, and we walked around this logging road about half a mile. Well, we didn't expect to get anything, and it was raining a bit as well, which didn't help. So we start, you know, Brooklyn did some wood knocks. We did some, you know, it's a whoop whoop noise. I can't reject it. I'll just throw it at them, and they did a howl. So we're making all the sounds, just not expecting to get anything, and then suddenly. It was very like it's very strange, a little logging road we were up. It didn't look quite right as well. So whether it was, you know, and it was very narrow. And suddenly Brooklyn heard the undergrowth moving, and he went, "Oh, the undergrowth's moving." And I said, "Oh, it's probably just you get these yearling deers, and they just follow you around like puppies because they've lost their mother." And I've had ones like trying to get into my tent and everything. So I just thought it was a yearling deer. It's fairly normal. And then suddenly. Brooklyn, Brooklyn's about 6'4", I'd say, 6'3", and he heard a growl a good foot above his head, within feet of him. So he said, "Oh my God, it's not a deer, I've just heard a growl." So we were like panicking that it was a bear, like standing upright. So we started to panic a bit at this point. Oh my goodness. So we're like backing away a bit from this undergrowth. And then suddenly a pine cone lands at our feet, and it's like, oop. It's got hands, so we've, oh my goodness, you know. So it was going to either be, well, initially with the pine cone, I said, "Oh, it could have just fallen off a tree," but I sort of knew it hadn't. And then suddenly a little stone came flying in front of my face. At that point, we definitely knew it had hands. And then this point, we started to panic because this stone literally came from 3-4 feet away.
Yes.
And it was like, you know, like this. And then there was absolute panic. And Brooklyn just he got a little machete on his belt. So he pulled this little machete out. He only got a short one. But and then we start swinging the torch around, thinking, oh, my God, what? And he thinks it's a person. So he's going, "Stop messing with me. Who's there?" So, and funnily enough, because he was a bit anxious, his English accent all came back. Yeah. Going, "Who's there? Do you mind telling us who's there?" It's quite funny. And then suddenly, we'd obviously upset this thing because we were sort of swinging the torch around and pulled a machete. And suddenly, something the size of probably about half a size of a breeze block came hurtling at the undergrowth with such force it went into the ground. Now, this is pretty hard ground, and every single little stone it hit smashed into bits. Now, these were hard little stones, and all this mud sort of splattered up my trouser leg. And at this point, we thought, whoa. So unless that's a human randomly sitting there, and this was like nearly 11 o'clock at night in really cold weather, randomly sitting there with a catapult, because there's no way a human could throw a rock like that with that force. It's a Bigfoot or a human with a catapult. And we thought, this has got to be a Bigfoot. So we were out of there. We just ran as fast. I thought, whoa, I'm not going to... I know they say don't run because you're a prey animal, but you try not running when something like that can come out of the underground. And you've had a growl as well. It's like, whoa, get out. And it's quite funny because I got very loose trousers on, so I suddenly realised they were falling down as I was running. So I was like, just saying, running! Brooklyn, don't leave me! My trousers are coming down! And we got back and to the car, and Brooklyn, suddenly his American accent had then come back.
Yes.
He said, hey, man, I'm out of it. This is just, oh, what the hell was that? I said, what do you think it was? And he's going, oh, my God. And I persuaded him to pull his car sideways. I said, look, I could get a thermal of your, because I've got a thermal imager on me, on those phone things, but they're really good, the extended range ones. I could get a thermal of your car engine cooling down from half a mile away. So if I could get that, if they come onto the path, I'll get a shot of them.
Yeah.
So we very reluctantly pulled his car sideways and we pulled the window down. At that point, I see what I think's a face coming towards us. I get a heat signature and I start yelling my head off. He starts yelling his head off. And then I suddenly realise I got my finger on the end of the thermal. I will not repeat what he said. At this point, he said, man, we're out of it. The gravel all shot everywhere. But that was, we were really shook up though. We had to keep stopping the car and we both sort of really, really shaken up. And he for days was like texting me going, oh man, what was that? What do you think it was? It can't be a human, can it? Unless I sat there with a catapult. So it must have been a Bigfoot. And the growl, you know, it was flat ground and the growl was a good foot above his head. So it's about 7.5 feet tall, whatever it was, 8 feet tall. So whatever it was very likely to be a Bigfoot. So, and they'd had solid sightings in that area. So that was a bit close to comfort.
Yes. I mean, even if you want to go at that sceptically, Jackie, right, you've got to work on the principle that someone sat in the woods with a catapult at 11 o'clock at night in winter.
Yeah.
With the greatest respect, and I don't take this personally, that a couple of idiots come traipsing past at 11 o'clock at night Bigfooting, you know?
So, yeah.
I mean, that...
It's more likely to be a Bigfoot, isn't it?
Yeah. That's my point. I mean... That stretches the bounds of credulity, really, in regards to the possible explanation other than that. Goodness me. I mean, there again, you know, the fact that you essentially received a warning shot, an extremely dangerous warning shot, is also a testament, like you say, to the force involved.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
But they say they purposely miss you. And I think if they wanted to hit us, they would have done.
Yeah.
Because Brooklyn said the rock came from I think, 4.5-5 feet away, no more than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think if they'd wanted to get us, they would have done. So I think it was more get out of my territory. And I think that's what happened with the Teddy Roosevelt, you know, the guy, the report he got. They got a lot of warnings, and in the end they didn't. So in the end, one of them got killed, you know. I think, you know, and it's like gorillas, you know, gorillas will bluff charge, in the end they will, you know, if you push them enough, you'll get hurt. But, you know, I think, yeah.
Have you had the privilege of going anywhere else in the world searching for large hominids, Jackie?
Myself and Richard and a team, Gregory Panchenko and various people from CFZ, Dave Archer is an amazing tracker, and Tim DeFriel, various other people from Centre for Sorting Zoology went over and met with Ukrainian scientists over in Kabardino, Balkaria, in Russia.
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting, sadly, because its main food, so we're looking for the almasty, its main food source, the suchlicks, which are basically like a little prairie dog type thing, they'd actually died out with a plague, so there's hardly any of them left. So we think that's why we didn't get any luck. And also the area that Richard had formerly been to was hardly anybody living there. It sort of suddenly, there was like loads of roads there. There was big roads there. And of course that, you know, so it had changed. But we did get an awful lot of reports of them. And again, like the Bigfoots and like the Kinnock tribe were talking about Bigfoots, the locals were talking about them as they were a perfectly normal animal.
Yeah.
We had a vicar there. Used to be a vicar, this young man. And he'd was describing how his grandmother, very bizarre account of how his grandmother used to have a female almasty live in her garden for years. Nice. And she put like bedding down in the shed, and initially it was a bit aggressive, but she got it really tame and would feed it, and it was female almasty. But it was very useful because it would attack any strangers who came into the garden with rocks. And it was like, he was describing this as the perfectly normal thing of having a hominid in your garden as a guard dog, you know.
Bizarre. Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre, you know. And loads of the, you know, and the one of the, there was two farmers I met, and you know, they'd seen it, and they were sort of saying, oh yeah, and they'll, like monkeys, they'll steal clothes and they'll try to put them on. And he said, one of them stole my daughter's dress, and I didn't have the heart to try to take it off her, because she looked quite nice in it. You know, it's quite bizarre, some of this stuff we were getting. And, you know, people were completely sincere with it, and every time they were describing the same sort of animal, you know. It was quite bizarre, that. And the local police said, oh, yeah, it exists, you know. coming out for drinks with us, and they were sitting with us, oh, yeah, they definitely exist, you know. And, quite bizarre.
It is, and I suspect, I think it's one of the downsides towards the almasty is because it's reported in quite lonely areas in Russia. I mean, there's probably, to my knowledge, I can think of two pieces of footage in the last 10 years that have come out of Russia allegedly of almasties, which was the famous one shot by the three boys.
I wasn't too sure about that one. It had got a big startle response, hadn't it? But the startle response is very similar to a bear's startle response, with the legs sort of shooting like when it's upright. I don't know about that. The actual startle response looked very bear-like. If you look at a bear's startle response, that looked very similar.
Yes. I mean, they did assure, I forgot the gentleman's name, there is a Russian boxer who has suddenly, he's decided he's going to become a professional almasty hunter.
Oh, the wrestler guy. Yeah, he's a politician now, isn't he? Yeah, yeah. I can't remember his name there, yeah.
And he went to interview them, and they swore to him on their mother's lives that it was a true video. You say, it may have been, but it could have quite conceivably be a bear, because it's behind that tree and you can't see anything really, other than there is clearly a shape moving about. They certainly run off like their lives.
I think they were sincere what they thought it was. But yes.
And the other one is the, and I'm not sure if you've seen this, is the kids who were driving in a car and something just jumps out of a field and chases them. That's a bit of a strange one as well, because that's another one that, you know, it's Russia. That could be a bear.
Yeah, there's one that runs in front of a truck, doesn't it, down a snowy. That's another one as well. I mean, they reckon in Russia you've got the two types. You've got the big Yeti type one, and then you've got the Almasty, which is a lot smaller. Mm. But they're still supposed to get to 7 feet, because Yetis can get a lot larger. So you're meant to have the two types. But,
I mean, it is interesting, like you say, that when you go to these far-flung places, the locals are quite matter-of-fact about it. So you have to... Either they're all buying into the joke and having a good laugh at everybody's expense, but then again, some of these experiences and stories are so perplexingly strange that it's very odd.
That's it. I mean, some of the people, like, there were police we were talking to, and they were like, you know, ex-vicar, you know, they're not the sort of people who you'd think, you know, they might to a level, but, you know, I think you would have, you know, and they were very consistent with what they're describing. They said it had hair hanging right over its face, you know, very, very consistent with what they're describing as well. And the person, the people we went out with, I mean, Gregory Pantek and Anatoly, they've seen it. Mm. And Gregory's seen it a couple of times now, and he described being in a barn. The barn, he took us to try to find the barn, but it's been knocked down now. But he was told about, you know, these legends about them messing with horses' manes and trying to plait them. Now, we thought it was one of these folklore things. And he staked out, when he was younger, he staked out this barn, and he sat in the corner, and he put sacking over him and hay to disguise his smell, so he could just about see out. And he's, you know, middle of the night, he suddenly hears something jumping down off the beams, and he looks up, and there's an Almasty right in front of him. He said, walks up to this mare, starts doing this very whistling noise, stroking the mare, and then starts playing with its mane, exactly like the legend said. And he said, suddenly he slightly moved, and it heard him, and it just legged it and jumped on the beams and was out the barn again. But he said, you know, he wouldn't have believed it unless he'd seen it. they're obviously, like, you know, enjoying this horse was okay with the animal, and it was enjoying the interaction with the horse. So, you know, they're obviously some of these legends. I mean, the Homo florensis ape. I mean, it's, you know, the locals used to talk about the Ebba Gogo, the local animal there, and people used to think it was a legend, but now they realise it probably was a real thing, you know.
Yeah, I think it is perplexing. Like you said, the stories about the Almasty that I've seen, there is several stories similar to that one, of them enjoying interacting with horses, which I've also heard, especially from certain parts of Canada. There is a certain folkloric element in regards to Bigfoot's interactions with horses in those areas as well, once again plaiting manes and tails.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, some of the things that could be attempts to sort of catch prey, you know, grab hold of things. But I think, you know, there's all sorts of bizarre things you hear, like some of the baboons in Africa have been sort of using local dogs as catching them and using them as guard dogs, you know. So you do get some quite bizarre things happening with animals. And you see, like, monkeys, don't you, in India, rescuing puppies, you know.
Yes.
And so I mean, you do get some quite unusual interactions between animals, and
often it's usually quite a symbiotic relationship. There's a wonderful video that's gone doing the rounds recently of a coyote and a badger just basically hanging out together.
That's lovely, that, isn't it? Yeah, the coyote, like, waits for the badger, and then they go down the tunnel together.
Yeah.
And there's obviously quite a nice little interaction, isn't there? Yeah,
the badger's waddling away.
Yeah, I mean, I reared a herring gull from a chick once that had been injured, yeah. And it actually made friends with next door's cat, and they used to hang out together.
Yeah.
Very, very bizarre. And then another neighbour's cat kept attacking them both, and they would gang up together against this other cat. very bizarre, you know, this interaction. But, you know, the cat would purr to the seagull and everything. It was quite weird. So you can have some strange animal friendships going on, but...
Yeah, very much so. I mean, especially these days with the internet, we see a lot more of them, and they often pull at your heartstrings and, you know, usually elicit a deep awe when you see such things. But it is peculiar. Monkeys especially do seem to have a real affinity with puppies for some reason. It's extremely peculiar.
Yeah, it is very strange, yeah.
but it's one of those things, I think, in most parts of the animal kingdom, you will often find, depending on... food and the environment around them, they will often develop symbiotic relationships that baffle us, really, because they're cross species, and essentially we're not used to seeing that kind of interaction other than in humans, are we?
No, that's it. I mean, also Bigfoot, so you've got the accounts. I mean, David Pilates as well touches on these in his book, but the BFRO got a report actually of a hysterical woman on their phone to them who's said she took, you know, a little boy kept talking about playing with a big hairy man, and turned a corner one day and there's her kid playing with a Bigfoot, you know, and, you know, the call was supposed to be hysterical. I was like, oh my God, you know, gotta get this thing out of the way. Mm. And, you know, David Pilates said there's accounts of, you know, a lot of accounts, police accounts of little kids saying the big hairy doggy man took me for a ride, you know, and fed me berries with his hands, you know. You know, and then some of these kids, sadly, they're found with they're dead, but they're found with crush injuries, but very consistent, like a gorilla, as if, you know, they would with a kid, hugging them a little bit hard. You know, they seem to be female Bigfoots abducting them, but sometimes they're uninjured, you know. So there is these quite bizarre things happen, you know.
Absolutely, and I mean, a prime example of that was the... That child last year, I'm trying to think, was it Casey Hathaway, 3-year-old?
Yeah, and he described similar experience, didn't he?
A bear looked after him, he claimed. And
kids, you know, they haven't got the concept of a Bigfoot, so they're going to go for the closest thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I saw certain people were, some people were actually accepting the fact that a bear looked after him for 3 days, more than the fact that it could possibly have been something else, which... I found baffling.
Yeah, because I mean, a bear will kill him, you know, because they're claws, you know, you've only got Gordon Buchanan was in that one program, wasn't he? And he accidentally pulled away from a bear that was holding his hand to get the berries, and it, you know, and really hurt his hand, you know, because they accidentally, you know, even if they're just holding your hand, the claws can cause an awful bit of damage. And I would have thought a child really would be a lot more vulnerable than an adult, you know.
Absolutely. You know, and at the end of the day, we are talking about North America's largest land predator.
Exactly. I think bears, you know, especially black bears can be quite docile, especially if they're semi-tame. But I think, you know, the risk of accidental injury with a child with a bear would be very high as well, you know. So,
It is. It's one of those weird stories that caused a massive furore. And then everybody's like, going, yeah, all right, we've moved on now. And I still find it an incredibly perplexing story. Whichever way it is, Jackie, whatever possibility is out there, it's an incredible story because essentially... none of it makes sense.
No, I mean, you do get weird things, don't you, with like lions adopting baby antelopes and all that. Yeah, so I mean, you do get really weird things like that happening, but it is. I mean, I think there's big hints that was probably a Bigfoot, you know. And you know, the previous children abducted, you know, and you know, who had police interviews, who were old enough to speak about it in police interviews, described it as a big hairy doggy man with hands feeding them berries. So, you know, bears haven't got hands, and you know, unless it was a dog man or something. But
once again, that is part, an aspect of the Bigfoot mythology that goes back to, you know, the vocal stories of the native peoples. Once again, there was always stories about children and women being taken by them for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's been cases of people in the orang reserves, actually women, you know, have been raped by orangutans. Mm. And when I was out, you know, and gorillas, when I was with the mountain gorillas, one of the girls, you know, had a lucky escape when one of the adolescent males took a fancy to her.
Yeah.
We had to divert her the attention. That we had to call the tracker and get it to divert the attention, because I think she would have had an unwanted liaison with a gorilla, you know, so that they will do that, you know.
Yeah, which is an aspect I don't think many people are aware of, Jackie. Something takes their fancy, they essentially try to do what they want.
Yeah, exactly. Male orangutans are very, you know, the researchers have to really watch them. I think gorillas, there's less of a risk, but male orangutans are known to be very much like that. So, that, you know, it's very, very possible, you know, especially if Bigfoots are a primitive hominid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, with the risk of carnivorous behaviour, I mean, early hominids were cannibals, you know,
yeah.
So... you know, there is that risk, but, you know, I very much want to stress to people that, you know, I don't think that's a good excuse to persecute them, you know. I think people just need to be cautious and try to understand them.
Absolutely. And, you know, cannibalistic tendencies are something that has only in recent memory been kind of, well, I wouldn't say eradicated is the right word, but it's certainly, you know, it's something that human populations around the world continued up until the mid-20th century at the very earliest, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And there's still some evidence that it's still happening in some remote areas. So as Bruce Parry's programme suggested.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes,
so,
rather him than me.
Yeah, that's it. I think he's very brave.
Yes,
I love the way he tries to do everything. It's like, ooh,
yeah,
painful, that Bruce, the bone through the nose and some of the other stuff. Oh dear me.
Yes. Yeah, there's going the extra
great
mile.
Great guy. I'd love to meet Bruce. I think he's one of my heroes. He's brilliant, yeah.
Absolutely. That's certainly going the extra mile, I think, Jackie, in many a field.
Yeah, definitely.
So, one other aspect of your interest is also that you're very interested in the paranormal. So I'm always intrigued when I meet someone who has a foot in both camps, as it were, Jackie, in cryptozoology and paranormal, because for many they would seem like odd bedfellows.
I think both of them, I mean, both of the, you know, cryptozoology and the paranormal research, I think my background's originally, it was a Bachelor of Science degree I did in psychology, and I was very much taught in scientific method. And I think both of them, you can go in with a very objective view of things. I mean, as quite a young child, at 8 years old, I had quite a paranormal experience in a friend of my granddad's house, which I went upstairs to the toilet and was just aware there was something there with me. Got out quick, came down and was told that something was literally picking up the dogs and throwing them across the room.
Oh.
And they'd had to have an exorcist in there. And that was my first experience of paranormal stuff. And I've had some pretty amazing experiences since. I've been in the room with a poltergeist, with things literally lifting up and being chucked at me. I've seen sort of light orbs. I've had sort of experiences where I've asked a ghost to do something and it's done it, which is pretty amazing. You know, doing things toward usually child ghosts are pretty amenable to doing things you ask them to do. I mean, I've had some, but we always go in with an open mind. Now, what else could this be? You know, is there any other explanation? You know, is it a spirit, or what is it? Is it as a replaying time sort of thing? I mean, interesting, Richard Freeman's belief is more there could be some entity like a fairy. He's more into that it could be something like that. And some of the descriptions of fairy experiences and poltergeists are very, very similar.
Mm.
You know, they're almost identical. So, you know, that's one possibility. But, you know, I definitely think there's something there. but I'm still trying to explain it. So,
Have you sort of travelled the UK in your paranormal research, or have you been further afield, or have you been to any sort of notorious British locations that we are probably aware of?
I've tended to do, I live around Devon, and there's some really interesting, Cowick Barton pub, which is basically one of the most haunted pubs. Mm-hmm. I've been to, we've got things like the Drew Staten Arms, which is haunted by the old landlady quite frequently. Yes. I've not encountered her, but... So we've got quite a lot of, there's bits on the moor. We've got the Hairy Hands legend.
Yes, one of my favourite ghost stories, yes.
Yeah, we've got all sorts of different things. I've investigated less sort of famous things. At the moment, I've been up actually to an interesting place in Derby called Georgian House Inn, and that's one of the most haunted hotels in England, and that's really interesting. I've picked up sort of similar stuff to what other people have there. And they've got quite a lot of rooms that are haunted, so that's quite an experience. So whenever I go up there to visit family, I try to get a room, and I'm working my way through the haunted rooms. it's quite fun, but a little bit, I never always get a good night's sleep there.
Yeah.
It's very friendly, and the staff are all into it as well. They've all had experiences, so it's quite interesting talking to the staff there, so... Lovely pub as well, very lovely pub.
Brilliant. I love it when you go somewhere, a location like a hotel or a pub, where everybody who works there seems very comfortable with their additional members of staff who seem to be flitting about. I always find that quite charming.
Yeah, because at the Cowick Barton I go to, they have a particular active ghost there. It's a child ghost. And they'll be in the disabled loo and she giggles in your ear, and when they hear her crying in the kitchen, and they're just, the owners, I think, at the moment aren't as keen on the ghost idea. But some of the other staff say, sort of be used to it. So, there's supposedly monk ghosts there as well. That's quite an interesting one. So, yeah. And I had a very, very unusual experience there once, where we were, we kept noticing the door handle going bang, 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 and down quite dramatically. So we tried to debunk it, couldn't debunk it. So it was a bit of a laugh, really. I think I'd had a few to drink. We'd all had a bit to drink. We weren't expecting anything to happen. And suddenly we stood in front of the door handle and for a bit of a laugh said, we know you're there. Do you mind doing the door handle? And suddenly out the wall, we saw a ball of light come out of the wall, goes right towards the door handle, and the door handle goes bang, 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 bang. We went, oh, my goodness. Can you mind doing that again, please? And it did it again, and then it did a third time. And we said, oh, thank you very much. That's very nice of you. That's all right. Thank you. And then it went back into the wall, and we went, huh? But that was amazing. I've never had anything that good. That was... completely to order.
Wow.
And we all saw this ball of light. It was almost like an amoeba. It was slightly undulating, like one of those Attenborough plankton things you see on the programmes. Slightly moving, and it was only tiny, but you could actually walk around it. It was quite visibly luminescent light. It wasn't a reflection or anything. That was really dramatic. That was one of the best I've ever had.
That
was pretty cool. Yeah.
Sorry about that, Jackie. I just had to sneeze, so I'll just cut that bit out.
That's okay.
My apologies. I hadn't lost interest. I was just about to kill myself through holding in my sneezing, so apologies.
Oh, that's okay.
So that's just an incredible experience, really. So as you say, that's probably the best sort of, to order. It doesn't get better than that for a paranormal researcher, really. So... how do you kind of view the whole aspect of it? Because I've said this to a few of my guests that I think that paranormal investigation seems to be a bit too much whistles and bells and entertainment these days rather than good, solid
investigations.
What's your feelings about that?
I think a lot of the programmes, I have to be careful what I say because I know some of the people that do these programmes, but I think there is the pressure to produce. And I think per Derek Acora as well, you know, sadly, bless his soul, but he's gone now. But, you know, the per guy, you know, there's a lot of pressure to produce, really, and people do have to, you know, they can't, I mean, mediums, you know, will tell you they can't always do it every night. Sometimes they're a bit tired, and if you've got that pressure, you know, you do have to start making up stuff. And, you know, and I think unfortunately that happened with Per Derek at times where the pressure and he couldn't pick up stuff. I have known people who've worked with him and they said he was amazing, you know, so I think he can do it. But I think there is that pressure, and you know, sometimes I'm quite sensitive to things. I can pick up things. And other nights I can't do it. And I think these programmes, there's so much pressure on them to produce. And I think you can go to sites and you won't get a single thing for days, you know. But unfortunately, they have to produce the goods. And I mean, I think some of these, like, especially some of the American ones, it's almost laughable. It's ridiculing. I think it was that one, Mountain Monsters. I mean, it's just ridiculing serious research, you know. You know, I think some of it's obviously based on real things, but, you know, I think it'd be better they made the programmes where they're showing you how to debunk, and if they get something, they get something. Yeah. I'd much prefer to see that and perhaps see the history behind the place, and the ghosts at the end, and then the makeup stuff. I think you know, it's not good. Yeah. It's not good at all.
I mean, it is difficult because ghost hunting is something I've undertaken in the past, and I'll continue to do so with continued enthusiasm for the field, regardless. But it is boring at the best of times, Jackie. Unless you know, camped in a decent pub with a nice real ale, it's hard work sometimes.
It can, yeah. It can be watching, at times it can be like watching paint dry, especially if you're getting no activity. But when you do get the activity, some of the adrenaline's going, you're like, oh my God. You know, it can be pretty scary if you suddenly get something, which I have at times, you know. Had a very, this place called Salem Chapel, just out, I think it's East Budley in Devon, and that was pretty scary. We did this, it's like, I think it's a Methodist chapel originally, and went upstairs and walked onto the level, just legs completely went under me, something which must have been affecting me. I just grabbed onto the, was trying to stop myself hitting my head, and dragged myself down, absolutely fine. Got somebody to go up with me the next time, a couple of people to stand either side of me. Went up, collapsed again, and three of us did it.
Wow.
So that was pretty scary, actually. I've never had, that was, I must admit, that was unpleasant. You know, could be there was infrasound in there, because that can cause you to collapse. You know, it's always an explanation. But that was rather strange. And I also, when I was in there at one point, I saw a little kid's head popping round a door. Thought, this is a setup. Legged it, chased wherever it was, and there was nothing there. So it's definitely, that was quite an active one, and they quite regularly do paranormal stuff there. So there's definitely something there, I think. But you know, sometimes it's not always that pleasant. I had one at Fort Widley in Portsmouth where the ghost hissed in my face, and it did the same to, it's really good, highly recommend them, company called Dark Encounters, run by a physicist called Jonathan, and he's part of ASAP with me as well, and very well run, but we both got hissed at, so it was pretty scary. But that was a bit, unpleasant, but that was an interesting one. And on the Napoleonic fort built into the chalk cliffs, and loads of tunnels, and even if you don't see anything, it's so atmospheric. And
yeah, it's a very spooky location. I've been there. I know exactly where you mean. And I think the story that their haunting is known for having quite a nasty streak, isn't it?
Yeah. And I also encountered in one of the rooms just off the entrance as you come in. It's like there was a student there doing MSc in paranormal research, and he got us doing like white noise in the ear and put blindfold on us to see if it's supposed to increase your extrasensory perception. And I suddenly could feel a wall of energy next to me. Now, I thought, whoa, that isn't human. So it made me scared even more.
Yeah.
And I shook my head and my earpiece fell out and I could hear breathing next to me.
Ooh.
But it sounded like a horse.
Yeah.
And I thought, whoa, that's really weird.
Mm.
So I just froze and I was just about to put my hand out to see whether I could feel anything, because I thought there was horses nearby. I thought there was a horse wandered in here, you know,
because yes.
It was quite loud. And I used to ride horses, I used to groom them, so I was used to the sound of a horse breathing next to me. I thought, that's a horse. And then the guy who ran the experiment put his hand on my arm. He reckoned I damaged his hearing, I screamed so much. And everybody came running, and I said, there was a horse in here. And people said, oh, you've just thought that, you're primed, you know, because you've looked to the horse at the stable. Oh, yeah, probably right. And then they fed back at the end, supposedly a horse did die in that area, which I think one theory was it was because the horse panicked from the stables, came clattering in, fell down what was then a cellar.
Mm.
And the one thing that people had heard was it was a concreted over body of a horse, which is quite spooky, and I had no clue about that. So that was one thing they'd heard, that there was actually a dead horse. And so that was a bit strange. I wasn't expecting that one.
And, I can imagine.
Yeah, so that's quite an active place. And funnily enough, another woman 2 weeks before had said there was a horse in exactly the same spot as I and heard it as well. So two of us. And I didn't know about the other woman, so that was a bit strange.
Absolutely. I'm always really intrigued by ghostly animal encounters, Jackie. I find them a really interesting part of the paranormal.
Yeah. I mean, ghost cats are very common. A friend, her cat died, and she said, oh, I keep hearing the ghost of my cat that's dead.
Mm.
So I even hear it eating the biscuits, yet there's no other cat in there. So
wow.
I was sat with them and said, I could hear these biscuits being moved around. I looked up and there was just nothing there. And I'd heard it as well. And it's like, whoa, you were right about that. We thought another cat had perhaps got in the cat door. And she said, no, I've locked the cat door so no cats can get in. And she just happened to have left the biscuits and not cleared them away. And then you could hear these biscuits. It was quite eerie. And, I knew somebody once who reckoned he's ghost of his dog. He used to get, on his bed, he used to get hollow where it looked like a dog had been. You know, it's very, very strange. So I think that's quite common, ghost animals. Yeah,
absolutely. I've had numerous reports about ghostly dogs, especially one that turns up occasionally for his dinner because you can hear his chain rattling against the bowl. And the other two dogs, the other two dogs in the house don't have a chain on.
Yeah.
So and they find that rather comforting more than frightening, which I probably would as well, cause as a big animal lover, I think it'd be nice to know that they're still around regardless.
And I knew guy used to live in this village in Devon. He originally came from Wales, and he said when he lived in Wales, he was the landlord of a pub, and people would frequently see his old dead dog wandering around and say, oh, I love your dog. And he said, my dog's been dead for 10 years. Freak everybody out. So, and they describe his dog to a T, so it's quite common that, I think,
Absolutely. Fabulous. Well, I think on that heartwarming note, I shall let you leave us today. So thank you so much for your conversation today, Jack. It's been really interesting, and thank you for your time. Where can everybody keep up to date and find out more about you?
I'm on Facebook, Jackie Tonks, Dackle, and then Tonks, under Exeter. I'm happy for people to talk to me on there. JackieTonks@hotmail.com, or no dots between my name, so they can speak to me there if they want to. Don't always guarantee a prompt response on my Hotmail because I don't look at it every day, but I'm happy to respond to queries on there. Facebook's often the best way to speak to me, though. But
So what have you got planned for the rest of the year then? Anything exciting on the horizon for yourself?
I'm going out with a group to look at investigate. I don't know whether it's there anymore. Jeff, the talking mongoose ghost from the Isle of Man.
So
that's a very bizarre poltergeist that manifested itself as a foul-mouthed talking mongoose. So I might be talking about that later in the year to conferences. So, yeah, it's quite a strange one, that. And I'm planning, I've got an invite out to the Rocky Mountains.
Lovely.
With Rocky Mountain Bigfoot Group. Hopefully I might be joining them at some point in the year. So, and they've got real big, very interesting sort of infrasound sort of activity as well. So that'll be quite interesting. So I've got my theories about what might be going on there as well. So sort of.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds... Two of my favourite subjects, because I love that talking mongoose. It's one of my favourite poltergeist cases that's ever occurred in the British Isles. It's brilliantly strange.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful.
Oh, bless him. It always makes me chuckle. I've mentioned this before. I just love the way it used to apparently collect the local gossip and then regale the family with who's been doing what and who's scandal from the village.
Yeah, that's it. It's great, isn't it?
Brilliant. Well, listen, Jackie, thank you once again for your time. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today, and we'll see you around. You take care.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.